Instantly, Ryan could see why the gate needed a row of tires to move. It was over a yard thick and composed of three layers of telephone poles arranged in a staggered pattern. The first row set vertical, the second sideways, and the third vertical again.
Need an implode grin to get through that. I'm not sure that even a law rocket launcher or an arm bruise could dent this thing.
Huh. Ryan flicked a finger and clicked the safety off the loaded stire. Blowing dark fumes from the tailpipe, the battered Metro angled away from the gate and turned to go around a squat brick wall set directly in front of the entrance to the Ville. Another firing wall, Ryan noted. A place for the Ville defenders to stand behind and shoot over the top at anything that managed to get through the colossal gate. Whoever designed this place really knew how to fight. Beyond the firing wall, Christy could see crowds of civvies freely moving about, talking, laughing, and shouting. There were rows of houses, huts, and hovels mixed together with taverns, a horse stable, and a tanner. Past those rose the slanted glass roofs of a greenhouse, the three pre-dark buildings towering above everything. At the sight of the greenhouse, Christy felt a shiver run down her back. The rest of the companions clearly shared her feelings on the matter. Sterling waved the Sekhmen onward.
All right, get moving. Clean up the Metro and get her ready for another run tomorrow. I'm going to intro our guests to the Baron.
What about the prisoner?
The Sec Chief made a face as if he had just bitten into an apple and found half a muty worm inside.
Yeah, bring him too.
Ryan glanced at Mildred, who shrugged.
At least it's not us.
So far.
Walking through the gateway, Ryan noted the solid construction of the gate and wall. From this angle, he could see that the second door was a fake. It was backed by the concrete bulk of the main wall and was totally immobile. The door was merely a facade to trick invaders into wasting time and effort to gain entry through something that couldn't be made to open.
Wow, I'm impressed.
Wonder which came first. Smart stickies, a good wall.
The companions turned to see the gate closing. The locking mechanism was made of wrought iron, with only a few shiny steel parts. The exterior skirt was raised back into position to hide the tires, and then was also locked into place.
I love that sound. Always feels good to be safe at home.
All right, drop those blasters.
Two Sekhmen rose from behind the firing wall, each bearing homemade scatter guns. A fat woman armed with an old Browning automatic rifle joined them. Mildred knew the blaster well. It had been an antique in her day. But these days, the clip-fed bolt-action weapon was a deadly marvel of military tech.
Not gonna happen.
Ryan kept his hand relaxed on the stock of the Stire. This whole thing didn't feel like a jack. And there was the distinct reek of stupidity about the fat woman. He'd stay sharp, but let this play out before spraying lead.
That was an order, not a request, Rist. Don't you worry, sir. I have the prisoners under control.
With that pronouncement, Sterling raised both eyebrows.
Prisoners? Did you say prisoners? Corporal, you're either drunk on duty or a nuke-sucking thieve.
Sir?
The two Sekhmen behind her began to lower their weapons, clearly telling which way the wind was blowing. Each of the men looked as if they would rather be swimming naked in a lake of rad water than involved in this present conversation. Striding to the firing wall, Sterling slapped the long blaster aside.
The prisoner has been taken to the square as per my orders. These people are guests of the Baron. Honored guests, I might fraggin' add, under my fraggin' personal protection.
Sir?
Put down those blasters.
Pivoting, Sterling lifted the hand off his gun belt and snapped a salute at the approaching group of people. Turning, the three guards behind the firing wall went pale. Yeah, this was the Baron. No doubt about that. Surrounded by a cadre of armed guards, the tall, lean man was wearing old boots that were highly polished. His clothes were spotless, without a single patch, and the blue steel gun at his right hip was a Glock autoloader. The left sleeve of his jacket was pinned to his shoulder, the arm missing completely. A screaming Blue Eagle tattoo was on the side of his neck, talons splayed as it dove to attack. Briefly, Ryan recalled the earlier comment on how fast the Baron was supposed to be with a gun. With only one arm? Interesting if it was true. Her long red hair waving about as if stirred by a breeze, Christy studied the tattoo. The same design was embroidered on Sterling's jacket, and it was vaguely similar to the stitching on her boots. Luckily, her pants were hanging on the outside, covering them at the moment. but from things Doc and Mildred once talked about, she knew that the eagle was the talisman of old America. But did it mean the same thing here? Or something else entirely?
So you're Ryan. I'm Baron Petrov O'Connor, ruler of this ville. Thanks for saving my son, as well as Stephen here. Good sect chiefs are as hard to find as live brass these days.
How do you know who we are?
Ryan looked for any of the Metro sect men in the group of bodyguards. None was in sight.
I told him. If the weather is right, we got a way to talk over a distance.
Tilting her head, Mildred considered that. Couldn't be a radio. There hadn't been one in the war wag. But then she hadn't noticed a prisoner either. And why would weather be a factor? Then she recalled the central buildings of the ville, the shiny windows brightly reflecting the weak sunlight.
Mirrors. You use mirrors to flash a code, just like beeping the horn at the gate.
The sect men were clearly astonished, but the Baron only raised an eyebrow.
Well, nothing is a secret forever. Or did you come up with something similar on your own?
Great minds think alike, sir.
A crowd of civilians was beginning to gather behind the bodyguards.
Great minds think alike. By the blood of my fathers, that's good. Triple wise. I can see why you folks travel with this wrinkly. Brains are just as important as blasters, I always say.
Ryan's estimation of the Baron went up a few notches. He knew that not every Baron was a power-mad lunatic controlling his people by the whip and iron club. Most of them were, but not all. However, Ryan had also met very intelligent Barons before, who still proved to be utterly ruthless coldhearts. The Baron turned to face the crowd.
My people! These outlanders saved the life of Daniel O'Connor and fought side by side with our brave sect men against the Stickies today.
Tucking a hand into his gun belt, Baron O'Connor faced Ryan once more.
You are my honored guests and will come to stay in the Citadel with me for the remainder of your visit. And any hand raised against them will be treated as if its owner had attacked a sect man. Is that crystal?
It was obvious that the locals truly respected the one-armed Baron, but feared his wrath even more. That was good to know. Ryan strongly doubted that anybody in this ville would be causing them any trouble again, at least for a while.
And that goes double for me.
Sterling stared directly at a select few civvies, all of whom immediately tried to radiate an air of innocence.
All right, get back to work, the lot of you. I want to see that new greenhouse finished by the full moon. Winter is coming, and sweat buys us food. Get moving.
The crowd started to thin, the people returning to their tasks, heading down the side streets into the ville, the sec man standing on the nearby wall going back on patrol. The brief break in their routine was over.
Come, it's a short hike to the Citadel. And if I'm any guess of faces, you six have had a rock-hard day. I know tired when it stands before me.
Well, we could use some place to knock the dust off our boots.
And boil our clothes.
That we can offer. I've smelled worse, but not from anything still walking.
No argument there.
Between the crud from the pre-dark sewer, her own sweat, and the blood of the muties, the physician was feeling rather ripe.
Over dinner, we can discuss the sticky problem.
And where their nest might be. I have a few ideas about that.
Excellent. The muties become bolder every year, and we constantly lose more troops. If we don't stop them soon, we'll have to burn down the ruins.
But wouldn't that also destroy the ville?
Most likely. But if we're going to eventually get nuked anyway, then we're taking the fragging bastards to hell with us.
I eagerly look forward to hearing a third option.
Staying in formation, the bodyguards cleared a path through the crowded streets for the Baron sect chief and the weary companions. As they passed the homes and shops, people paused in their work to check out the strangers. Some of the oldsters scowled in stern disapproval, but the children watched in innocent, wide-eyed wonder. Many of the younger people watched the companions with open hostility. Only a few looked on with frank curiosity.
We're not very popular.
So it would appear.
The sun was starting to set behind the skyscraper downtown, casting its long penumbra across the ville, adding to the band of darkness thrown by the defensive wall. The air was rich with the smell of life, frying fish, boiling soup, unwashed bodies, leather, beer, and hot metal. Suddenly, there was a movement underfoot. JB almost lost his balance as a small dog ran between his feet. In a snarling pounce, the dog leapt upon a rat, sinking its jaws into the back of the rodent and shaking it vigorously until the spine snapped. Happily wagging its tail, the dog lay down in the middle of the street and began eating the corpse. Fighting back the urge to pet the animal, Mildred heartily approved of its presence. Rodents carried a lot of diseases, and while cats were good for mausers, the house pets were completely outclassed in a fight with a full-grown rat.
Do you use dogs to hunt muties, Sterling?
Why? Do stickies smell like rats? Oh, you're serious? Dogs?
Hopefully bigger than that one.
The little dog struggled to haul away the fresh carcass from the companion's tromping boots. The two combatants had nearly been the same size. Unless the Ville had 1,000 such dogs, nobody sane was going to hunt stickies with these runts. The hounds at Ryan's old Villa Front Royal had stood half as tall as a man and could bring down a full-grown bear.
Nope. That's all we have. Are they too small?
Hell yes.
Pity.
Twirling his walking stick, Doc started to tell the others about how backwoods Mexicans used to hunt mountain lions with chihuahuas, but held his tongue. The tale was outrageous, but true. However, few people ever believed that a huge lion could be brought down by the tiny yapping dogs, even when they attacked in packs of 100. Passing by a tavern, a little girl sweeping trash out the door stopped to stare at Jack in growing horror. Dropping the broom, she made some sort of a gesture in the air that the teen recognized as a ward against evil. In his long travels, Jack had seen such things many times before.
Nope, not a ghost.
Hesitantly, the child watched him walk by, then raced inside. Doc patted Jack on the shoulder.
I always knew you had a good heart.
I like it.
Several blocks later, a drunk staggered into the group and out again, never really noticing the Baron, even when he bumped into the noble. The Sekmen bristled, but O'Connor laughed the incident away.
Been there, done that. Although I'm usually singing when I get that tanked. That wasn't a Sekmen, was it, Chief?
Sterling watched the drunk stumble into the tavern.
No, my lord. Just a pot.
Fair enough, then.
Keeping a private council, the respect the companions had for the Baron increased again. There were far too many rulers that would have killed the drunk for a lot less of an offense. As they approached the three Predark buildings, the ground dipped slightly, and the companions could see that the surrounding area was filled with greenhouses, easily a dozen of the structures, if not more. The transparent buildings were placed to catch the southern exposure, and inside were rows upon rows of wooden tubs, lush with growing plants, flowering vines climbing up a line of lattice trellises, and bushes dotted with bright fruit. Off to the side stood the skeletal framework of two more greenhouses, only a few square panels installed in the roof. Behind the sheets of glass, green plants grew in orderly profusion, the tiny dots of color among the greenery showing a wide assortment of fruit and vegetables.
Where do you get your dirt? Or do I not want to know the answer to that?
Make it ourselves, but the crops yield less and less food every year unless we completely replace the soil. Must be doing something wrong.
Either that, or else they don't know anything about crop rotation, Christy realized privately. Back in Colorado, her mother had taught Christy much about plants and the cycle of life. Some plants took vital chems from the soil, while others put them back in. Alternate the plants correctly, and a greenhouse could triple its yield in a single year. Then again, maybe they were using something that was contaminating the soil.
Excuse me, healer. Mildred, correct?
Mildred Wyeth, Baron.
You know, Mildred, I have several healers, but none of them can remove a sticky's hand without also removing the limb it's attached to.
Unable to stop herself, Mildred looked at the pinned sleeve of the Baron. O'Connor nodded at the unspoken question.
Yes, you're correct. It was my dear wife who took an axe and cut me loose. I damn near got aced anyway from the blood loss. Unfortunately, we haven't had similar good luck with other Sekmen and civvies that we tried to save.
I'll be happy to teach your healers what to do. I happen to know a lot of tricks they can use to save lives. How to stop blaster wounds from festering, set broken bones so that the person isn't a cripple afterward, heal shine burns properly, all kinds of things.
As they walked along, the Baron looked her in the face, carefully studying what he saw there.
By God, I believe you. Okay, healer, name your price.
You really have nothing we can use. We already have a week of room and board to our credit.
Board?
A week of beds and food.
Thoughtfully, O'Connor chewed over the odd phrase. Of course, beds were made of a mattress laid over a board.